every September, I mean literally every September, thousands of ACCA candidates walk into the Advanced Financial Management exam, punch perfectly accurate numbers into their calculators, and they still fail.
Oh, absolutely. It happens every single sitting.
Yeah. And today, we are doing a deep dive to expose those fatal calculation traps, the ones that are bleeding your marks so you don't, you know, make the same errors.
Right. We are cutting all the fluff today. This briefing is purely about technical accuracy and exam technique. Our overarching mission here is to basically weaponize the examiner's report for you.
I love that phrase, weaponizing the report.
Exactly. We're going to look at the exact places where candidates are just handing over easy points, starting with a really fundamental problem in how students approach the math itself.
So in the classroom, I always talk about the broken calculator analogy because, well, a lot of candidates operate exactly like a broken calculator.
Oh, that is the perfect way to describe it.
Right. Because a broken calculator just spits out the literal output of whatever buttons you mashed. It has zero awareness of context. I mean, if you type in a negative number for a human being's age, a broken calculator just accepts it.
Doesn't question anything.
Exactly. Passing students, on the other hand, apply a commercial reality filter to that output. And this starts with something as basic as inflation and cash flows. Candidates treat inflation like it resets every January.
Oh, man, they just apply a flat rate year after year.
Yes.
Which completely ignores the mechanical reality of compounding. If your costs go up 3% this year, next year's 3% increase builds on that new higher baseline.
Which is just basic math, really.
It is. But failing to compound inflation means you are systematically underestimating your future costs with, you know, every passing year of the project.
And that same blindness to the timeline is exactly what torpedoes working capital calculations. I see this all the time. Candidates drop the initial outflow into year one instead of year zero.
Which makes no sense commercially.
None. They forget that you need the cash immediately, like keep the lights on before you even open your doors. And then instead of calculating the incremental change in working capital for subsequent years, they just drop in the absolute total balances.
Right. And by dropping in the absolute balance every year, you are mathematically telling the examiner something insane.
You really are.
You're telling them that you are repurchasing your entire inventory from scratch annually without ever recovering the previous year's funds. I mean, you only need to fund the increase in working capital.
Yeah, the timeline issue gets even more severe when we hit perpetuity models. The exam instructions will explicitly say, assume no growth after year four.
And let me guess, students still include a growth rate.
Every time. But even worse, a perpetuity formula condenses infinite future value into a single lump sum at year four. But you don't live in year four.
Right, you live today.
Exactly. If you don't discount that lump sum back to year zero using the year four discount factor, you are treating future money as if it's already sitting in your pocket.
Which is a fatal error. And that ties directly into what is arguably, well, the ultimate valuation sin.
Oh, treating top-line revenue as post-tax operating cash flow.
Yes. Treating top-line revenue as post-tax cash flow isn't just a rounding error. You're essentially valuing a utopian company where suppliers work for free and, you know, the government just doesn't collect taxes.
That'd be nice.
Right? You end up valuing a business at these astronomical numbers because you've stripped out the entire commercial reality of corporate tax liabilities and operating costs.
Okay, so moving from those utopian valuations into the harsh reality of risk management brings us to 4X risk. Hedging acquires real-world precision, which means knowing how financial instruments actually trade.
Definitely.
But wait, I need to stop you there for a second. The examiner report always dings students for writing down fractional contracts, like they'll write 0.4 futures contracts. But if my math strictly dictates I need exactly 10.4 contracts to hedge my precise exposure, shouldn't I write that down for maximum mathematical precision?
Well, in a purely theoretical vacuum, sure. But in the real world, you cannot call a broker and purchase a fraction of a contract.
Right. They'd laugh at you.
Exactly. You have to round to the nearest whole number. If you push forward using a fractional number, it distorts your entire premium calculation because, well, you're pricing an instrument that literally doesn't exist.
So you're acting like the broken calculator again, which naturally leads to those incredibly vague recommendations we see.
Oh, the vague answers are the worst.
Yeah, just writing down a string of numbers or saying 40 contracts isn't a strategy. To grab those marks, you must explicitly state whether you are going to buy or sell, the exact number of whole contracts, and the expiry month.
Your broker needs actual instructions, not a riddle. And speaking of premiums, candidates are throwing away precious exam time doing completely unnecessary currency conversions.
Oh, I hate seeing this.
If the auction premium is provided in dollars and your working currency is dollars, just stop converting it. You're wasting time and risking calculation errors for no reason.
Exactly. But, you know, all of this mathematical heavy lifting means absolutely nothing if you can't communicate the commercial reality to the board of directors.
So what factor?
Yes. This is how you capture the professional skills marks. And the most common trap here is sitting on the fence. Candidates will crank out, like, 20 marks worth of complex hedging math and then completely refuse to make a definitive recommendation.
You have to take a stand. You are playing the role of an advisor. Make a clear choice based on your calculations. And when you list your assumptions, don't just bullet point them.
Yeah, bullet points won't cut it.
You lose easy skepticism marks if you fail to discuss why those assumptions might actually be wrong and what the commercial fallout would be.
Like assuming sales will just magically jump 20% to justify an investment without actually analyzing if the market will tolerate the corresponding price increase?
Exactly. That kind of insight shows true commercial acumen.
And please, do not throw away communication marks on basic structure. Use subheadings. Always, always include a conclusion. A report without a conclusion is just, well, it's just a pile of unorganized notes.
It really is.
Awesome.
To succeed in September, your focus must shift from copying facts out of the scenario to actively evaluating them. The examiner already knows what they wrote in the case. They want to see your judgment applied to those facts.
Absolutely. So when you sit down in that exam hall, consider this. AI can already do the baseline calculations flawlessly in milliseconds.
That's true.
The examiner isn't testing if you can out-calculate a machine. They are testing if you have the human judgment to tell the machine it's solving the wrong problem. Keep that commercial reality filter on and go grab those marks.